This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN1290. Have to give our thanks to Kerry Fraser of TSN, former NHL official, for joining us for that Saturday Spotlight interview. In case you missed any of it, it will be available on TSN1290.ca. It'll be available on our website, IllegalCurve.com. And of course, it will be available via iTunes. Subscribe, get sent to you each and every week, the Saturday Spotlight, NHL Midweek, and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show in its entirety. Coming up next Saturday on Saturday Spotlight, it's our intention, and fingers crossed, Yvonne Cornoyer, scheduled hopefully to join us next Saturday for a Saturday Spotlight interview. 10-time Stanley Cup winner is going to be in town. Coming up, he's going to be speaking at the Winnipeg Blues annual dinner, which is coming up this month. So we're hopeful to have Yvonne Cornoyer join us on Saturday Spotlight later on next Saturday.
The Roadrunner.
Yeah, the Roadrunner. The Blues dinner is available, is Tuesday, November 25th at Canadiens Polo Park. So we do encourage you, check out the Blues website for information on how you can purchase a ticket and help support junior hockey here in Winnipeg.
Are you hosting that?
I'm not this year, but we're still glad to support them. And
I can host.
I'm sure you could host. I don't doubt that for
a second.
I'll
do it for three beers.
Well, you probably get better after three beers, I'd imagine.
I'll do it for two.
Okay. you do it for somebody's leftover beer, let's be honest. We want to send our best regards out to Brian Murray, the Ottawa Senators general manager. In an interview with Michael Farber earlier this week on TSN, he disclosed that he has stage 4 colon cancer, and obviously a tragic situation, but Brian Murray trying to make the best out of what is, like I said, a tragedy, encouraging men and everybody to get checked for colon cancer. It is Movember, so that's one of the things that Movember helps to support right now. So we echo those concerns. Do go get checked. Avoid whatever stigma you might think. It's more important that you get checked and override the stigma. And we do send our best to Brian Murray, Ottawa Senators general manager, in the fight against colon cancer. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll look at a different way to maybe watch your favorite NHL team.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Couple minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Want to follow up to a story we brought to you earlier this summer. Rick Westhead, TSN senior correspondent, covering this story, available on TSN.ca. It has to do with the NHL and the method in which that they sell their broadcast rights. They're in the midst of a lawsuit. A lawsuit was filed by a number of hockey fans saying that the NHL, by not allowing, Winnipeg Jets, or it's U.S. related, so let me, by not allowing New York Islanders fans in Tampa Bay, in the Tampa Bay area, to buy only the New York Islanders hockey games, are violating antitrust laws. So these fans have filed a lawsuit against the NHL saying that this is anti-competitive, it's violating antitrust laws. It seems to me, and it's going through the court system right now, and the NHL has hired a Nobel Prize winning economist to back their case against these fans. It really could change the way in which TV rights are sold in the United States, and this is only in the United States, in that, you know, if you live in Minnesota and you want to watch Los Angeles Kings games, but you don't want to buy all the other 29 teams' games through Center Ice, you could be able to, if the courts find in favor of these fans, just buy the Los Angeles Kings games, sort of a la carte, as opposed to the entire package. You know, is this a good choice? Is this a good decision for fans, in your mind?
I mean, I'm really interested to see how this all goes. You know, the NHL tried to get this case thrown out early on, and that wasn't the case. They weren't successful in that respect, and so they're going to be hearing, you know, the evidence. And there's a lot of, you know, if you read about it, Drew, there's economic experts on both sides that are going to be expert witnesses here. And yeah, I see the point of the NHL. I see the point of the fans, though. If you know, why should I, if I live in another city, why should I have to buy a package for all 28, 29 other teams when I don't have any interest in watching them, if I just only want to watch my favorite team in the national games. So you wonder if, you know, if, see, the fans only want it to be for that specific team. You wonder if there'll be a scaled package where you can pick two teams or five teams or the whole package, and then that'll be scaled pricing-wise.
Mm-hmm. Like a regional package.
Yeah, that could be something that could be a reasonable middle ground. But I don't know if this is going to have a reasonable middle ground. The fans may want to take it all the way here. And if you read the details of the West Side article, he talks about how the fans have incurred damages already of about $25 million in baseball, they say, up to this point, because of not being unable to only buy their favorite team's games. So there's not insignificant amounts of money at stake here.
We're going to keep an eye on this story as it progresses through the U.S. legal system and when developments warrant. And Rick Westhead has been at the forefront of this story. As developments warrant, we're going to keep bringing him to you here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, because it is something that is sort of under the radar right now, but could have a significant impact on how fans enjoy the games. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Ryan Kesler and his comments about the Vancouver media. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus getting us on and off the air. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Still to come on the show today, joining us in 30 minutes time is going to be Steve Karp from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, talk about the NHL in Las Vegas saga that seems to continue to build up steam and almost seems like an inevitability now. We'll talk to Steve about that in about 30 minutes to see if that is in fact the case. 6 p.m. tonight, the Jets and the Nashville Predators from Music City, USA. Right after us, it's Hustler and Lawless. Gary's on his way to the Western semifinal of the CFL, so it's Hustler and Westwood? Somebody, not sure. Anyways, we'll
that's
find
probably
out right
Troy.
After us. Probably Troy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, they're right after us, and then Rick Ralph and the Jets pregame show at 5 o'clock. Richie, you're on the pregame show tomorrow with Rick.
Yeah.
There you go. So, in case you haven't had enough for Richie, and I can think I can speak for Ezzy when I say we definitely have that. You can get a little share of him tomorrow as well. Ryan Kesler, former Vancouver Canuck player, in an interesting article earlier this week, you know, talking about the differences in lifestyle between being a member of the Anaheim Ducks and the Vancouver Canucks. And he talks about the ability to go out and be a free person and not have to, you know, deal with the media spotlight that comes with playing in Anaheim versus Vancouver. Here's the quote: "I think just being able to enjoy your time off the ice. You can be with your family and kind of just live your life like a normal person and not have that famous part of it." He goes on to talk about the Vancouver media, and I quote, "That's the problem with Vancouver. The media makes up a lot of stories that aren't true. To be honest, I was really sick of certain media guys throwing people under the bus." Continuing on, "No matter how much my old teammates say it doesn't bother them, it affects them. It does in that city." Was Ryan Kesler treated unfairly by the Vancouver media during his time there, to your mind?
I don't think so, and I always really get annoyed when I hear NHL players talking about this. You make $4, $5, $6, $7, $8 million a year. You have to be able to deal with that, and I don't know what he's talking about specifically. I mean, the reality is, guys, we know that the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Anaheim Ducks were trying to acquire Ryan Kesler before the trade deadline. I mean, that's a fact. It's been reported. And I don't know if he's talking about that as far as the trade rumors go or other things that were going on in the dressing room, Richie. But, I mean, we've heard Ryan Kesler isn't the most liked guy in a dressing room. And we know that Ryan Kesler fought Corey Perry when he played for the Vancouver Canucks. And now he's obviously part of the Anaheim Ducks. Corey Perry, unfortunately, has had some health issues there. I think he's coming back to the lineup soon. He's getting better. He had the mumps,
yeah,
I believe.
Everybody in the NHL has the mumps.
Beauchemin
right
as well. But, you know, I think last year, and we talked about this a lot with some of the guests we had on, Jim Jameson and Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver Province, Richie. Last year was such a gong show in Vancouver with what was happening in the goal crease with Luongo and Schneider. And then you had John Tortorella. That obviously didn't work out very well. He was let go at only after 1 year. But, you know, Ryan Kesler, I think, you know, it's kind of easy for him now that he's in Anaheim, living in California. You know, as far as the, you know, I can go out and all that, I mean, I wouldn't mind. I don't know. You guys have been to Vancouver. I wouldn't mind living in Vancouver. It's not the worst place to live. So he's making Vancouver out to seem like not like a world-class city. But I think it's easy for him to say all this stuff now that he's in Anaheim and he's out of the Vancouver spotlight. But again, it goes back to what I'm saying. When players complain about being in a hockey market, and, you know, whether it's a Canadian city or some of the American cities on the East Coast, I can't really feel sorry for them, because that goes with being a highly paid professional hockey player.
Well, Richard, let me read Ryan Kesler's comments about whether or not he's a good teammate. Quote Ryan Kesler, "I don't buy that I'm not a good teammate. You can ask any of my teammates. I know when I was traded, if I was such a bad teammate, 95% of the guys wouldn't have texted me afterward." You know, do you think Ryan Kesler is a bad teammate?
I mean, that's hard for me to say, Drew. I mean, when you're on the locker room, it's hard to say whether he's a bad teammate. Let me rephrase.
Do you think his reputation of being a bad teammate is, you know, a function of the Vancouver media making things up? Or do you think there is some smoke where there's fire in that case?
There may be smoke where there's fire. I just think that he is, in general, an arrogant guy and talks a lot for somebody who hasn't really won anything. And that generally rubs people in the game, players, management, coaches, the wrong way. So there's that to get over. I think his style of play is probably not conducive to an overly long career. I think he's going to wear down here over the next little bit. So if they want to make gains with him, it better be in the first year or two, I think, of having him. I'm not sure what's going to be with his contract and such. But he rubs people the wrong way, and I'm sure he rubs some of his teammates the wrong way. Because somebody texts you doesn't mean that they liked you. But because somebody in the media says not everybody likes you doesn't mean they don't.
I text Drew all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely don't like me.
But somebody in the media says they don't like them. I mean, do they really know? They very possibly could, but maybe sometimes they don't get along with him. So it's hard to say. But it's not that hard to say that he's not a very well-liked opponent. And not that you want to be a well-liked opponent, but I think you want to be a respected opponent. I'm not sure at all times he's a respected opponent.
Then all that stuff, and you remember that, Drew, the stuff in 2010 when the U.S. faced Canada in the gold medal game, and how competitive he was with Luongo and all that, and, you know.
Well, he basically trash-talked Luongo to the media between the second and third periods. His teammate in Vancouver is saying he looked shaky.
Yeah.
And those things, I mean, I don't know what their relationship is like, but if I was Roberto Luongo, I would take issue with that. There's a way to go about that. I know it was an emotional game, but there's a way to go about that in a classy fashion, and he didn't do that, which isn't the first time he didn't go about something in a classy fashion. And, you know, who knows if that, even if that didn't hurt their relationship, I'm sure at some point it hurt Luongo's confidence in himself. So why would you do that?
Right, Rich. And there's a difference between being respected by players across the National Hockey League and being a good teammate. Everything that I've heard, I mean, the guy who loves to win, and he was a good teammate, as far as there have been controversies with certain players. And that's different. I think the way he plays, he might go over the edge sometimes and, you know, say some things on the ice and do things on the ice that maybe doesn't make him the most loved player. But again, I don't think Milan Lucic is a loved player at all either, and the guy has a Stanley Cup. And at the end of the day, the Anaheim Ducks got him not only for the way he can score goals, but the way he can play defensively. When Kessler's on his game, he's a very good player. And we saw that in that run to the Stanley Cup Finals when the Canucks were a couple games away from winning the Stanley Cup, guys. So the Anaheim Ducks, as Richie said, they're probably hoping that it pays dividends immediately, because you traded guys like Nick Bonino and the draft pick because you want Ryan Kesler to put you over the top. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, the Anaheim Ducks got him because they want to beat the LA Kings. The LA Kings have won two cups now in the last 4 years, and they think a guy like Kesler can make them a better team around playoff time. Doesn't really matter where you finish in the standings of the regular season, because the Ducks will be at the top of the Western Conference standings. So will the LA Kings, probably. And, you know, so all of this that is coming out here, I think that he's definitely, it seems, a lot happier in Anaheim, because it seems like he was ready to get out of there. In Vancouver, I mean.
For now, he is. I mean, we'll see what, if, I mean, he's in a good situation. It's unlikely that Anaheim's ever going to be really on a downturn anytime soon, given, you know, Getzlaff and Perry's presence.
Yeah.
But, you know, it'd be very curious to see his reaction if Anaheim, for whatever reason, started struggling again in the next couple of years and they weren't the dominant juggernaut that they are. You know, let's see how happy he is there. You know, it's easy to say that you're unhappy when things are going bad and the team's on a downward spiral and the locker room's not a great situation. You know,
well, he's still got to re-up there, right, Drew? He's got $5 million on this year and $5 million on next year cap-wise. Then he's a UFA. And right. So does he want to re-up there? I mean, it seems like an appealing place to play. You slot in behind Ryan Getzlaff. Your pressure offensively is certainly lessened by the fact that you're playing behind one of the best centers in the National Hockey League. And you know you're going to be on a winner, likely, based on what you've said. You know, John Gibson coming through, and they have some nice young complimentary talent, and they have what the hardest plate pieces to get, Perry and Getzlaff.
I have trouble believing that the media in Vancouver changed that dramatically between their Stanley Cup run and 2 years later, that when he demanded his way out. So, you know, is it the media? Or
well, he was reported to have been going around the Olympic Village just talking about how he wanted out, like after the Olympics and he lost to Canada. That was what I had heard.
Fine.
So, I mean, if you're going to be that open about it and people are going to write about it that openly, then maybe you shouldn't be that open about it.
Yeah, or you should, you know, really maybe, you know, formally, you know, ask for a trade or something, you know.
Or maybe you should come through in a big game on, like, no points. What, do you have any points in the finals in 2010 in the U.S.-Canada game? Certainly didn't score when Canada shut out the U.S. In Sochi last year, and I believe they lost 4-0 in Game 7 as well. Not that he wasn't
on home ice.
Not that he wasn't instrumental in that run there in Vancouver. But hey,
game was a riot.
It's a few big. There's a few big games there that I didn't see any Ryan Kessler anywhere.
Yeah,
talks a lot for a guy who hasn't, you know, who's accomplished quite a bit, but he hasn't reached the mountaintop and. Acts like he has about four times over.
Right. Never won anything. Push comes to shove. You know, how many rings are on your fingers or how many gold medals are around
your
neck?
That's my opinion on him. Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, Ryan Kessler, good that you're happy in Anaheim, but, you know, all the best to you. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Hockey Hall of Fame. We'll talk about the Hockey Hall of Fame potential inductees for next year.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
This segment of The Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Don't be an Ezzy, wear a mouth guard. Give
what?
Yourself well, it's the commercial. You get hit in the face with a puck.
Oh.
Don't
what
be
about
an
winning an Ezzy?
I mean, I thought it was pretty obvious there. Okay. Don't be an Ezzy. Wear a mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Just contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. You can really say don't be an Ezzy in any number of different manners. So, I mean, I can understand your confusion, I guess, in that case.
That's true.
Yeah. The Hockey Hall of Fame. Last night in Toronto was Hockey Hall of Fame night, where the players were honored prior to the Leafs and the Penguins game. The induction ceremony comes Monday evening. You can see it on TSN2 if you want to watch some great hockey players get inducted, coaches and referees as well. Dominic Hasek, Peter Forsberg, Rob Blake, Mike Modano, Bill McCreary, and the late Pat Burns all get inducted on Monday into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Figured would give us an opportunity to look at the potential candidates for the 2015 Hockey Hall of Fame class and the names that are being bandied about. You know, you have to wait 3 years from your retirement before you are eligible to be inducted. The first one, right at the three-year mark, is Nicklas Lidström.
And he will guaranteed be in.
Is he a shoo-in?
Oh,
everybody?
Yeah.
Lidström, yeah.
I know. I know he is. I just want to make sure that there's nobody, you know, aside from
Bobby Orr than Nicklas Lidström. That's the top two.
Well,
that's what I think most people think.
I think Dave Manson's in there somewhere, too.
So Lidstrom's a shoo-in.
Lidstrom's a shoo-in in your mind?
Yeah, Lidstrom is a slam dunk. Shoo-in, shoo-shoo-in, whatever you want to say. He'll be in.
Now, Sergei Fedorov, he's also eligible. He's been eligible. This isn't the first time he's eligible.
I would say, no, it's not. And I would say that there's a very strong chance he's close to a shoo-in. You know, Fedorov, Richie... You remember, I always think of Fedorov, and he has so many great memories of Fedorov, but I remember especially, you know, at the old arena watching the Detroit Red Wings, and they'd have five Russian players on the ice. So you're talking Fedosov, Konstantinov, where there was Larionov, you had Fedorov. I remember watching him, and they were so good. And that was a time when I think maybe at the height of Russian players being in the NHL, as we talked about on last week's show and the midweek show, we're starting to see less Russian players now because of obviously the rise of the KHL and all of that. But for me, you mentioned that he was eligible before and some other players had to get in, Pavel Bure being one that got in last year. So for me, he's a shoo-in because he's got the Stanley Cups. You know, maybe the longevity.
Let's go through his numbers. 1,179 points in 1,248 career
point
games.
Game player.
Six-time All-Star participant.
Exceptional defensive player, too. When you talk about the offensive game, I mean, you're talking about a guy who played center and was such a good defensive player.
And who did he learn that from? He learned that a lot from Larionov.
Yeah, and see, Yzerman, I mean, you
and
know.
Yzerman, yep.
Was he, I mean, I think he was, I think, is it safe to say he was underrated for his defensive play? I mean, he won the Selke trophy.
Yeah, he did win the Selke.
Yeah, he won it twice. Selke.
And that Detroit team got a ton of attention. I don't think he was underrated. He was a great player. I mean, one of the best players of his generation. The problem is when you get to these, you know, I think Fedorov probably by the standards that the Hall of Fame is, you know, past present, he would be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I think so.
Well, I think you and I, we were talking about this before the show. And
especially,
I
mean, with Bure getting in. Because let's be honest here, Bure, if he doesn't have all those injuries, Bure year after year was leading the league in goals, and all that. And then you look at Fedorov, the only knock against Sergei Fedorov, because I think he is going into the Hall of Fame in 2015, the only knock is maybe he hung on a little bit too long towards the end of his career. But, I mean, you can't blame him. You know, some of those years he wasn't very good. You'd think of, you know, towards the end of the year, Carolina and all that. So, was he on Carolina?
Fedorov was on Washington.
Washington is what I'm thinking of.
He signed an offer sheet with Carolina.
Right.
Because if you go back, actually, Mike Ilitch, the general manager of, the owner of the Detroit Red Wings, and Peter Karmanos, the owner of the Carolina Hurricanes, are both Detroit residents. That's where they're, and they have a long and storied history of not really getting along, and they're heavily involved in the Detroit Junior hockey program. So when Fedorov was holding out, because he held out for about half a season, if I recall correctly, Carmano signed him to that offer sheet that had a huge upfront signing bonus, did it not?
Yeah, similar. It was, I think, 6 years, 39 or something like that. It was similar to the Rangers and Joe Sakic.
Right. So and it sort of had a poison pill, I think, right off the top.
Sorry, I just looked it up. I was thinking of Columbus.
Not
Carolina.
You're right. He had some years where he certainly hung around. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, a lot of players have years where they hang around too long. That can't be held against them. And it's obviously going to pull down their points per game and things like that. But you have to just take that into account.
Moving down the list. Next guy listed, Mark Recchi. 1,652 games.
I think he should absolutely be in.
Let me finish. 577 goals, 956 assists for 1,533 points. Number 12 all-time on the scoring list. He's got the numbers, but you know, anytime you went to a game and Mark Recchi was playing, did you ever get any sort of level of excitement, like, wow, I get to see Mark Recchi tonight?
I think so. I mean, maybe he wasn't as flashy as a Sergei Fedorov or flashy as a Peter Forsberg, but to me, like, again, and I know the argument always comes up with the Hockey Hall of Fame, it should be for the best players and not just the really good players or
the Hall of Excellence, not the Hall of Very Good.
And granted, Drew, he maybe, when you look at when you were, you know, around when Mark Recchi was still playing, maybe he wasn't someone who, you know, you really paid to go see, but I think he was always part of really good teams. And, you know, to me, when you look at his numbers, and I mean, come on, 577 goals, which is top 30, I believe, 1,533 points, 1,600 games, longevity. Like, again, if you're talking about like kind of like a Mike Gartner type of player. And so, I mean, I think he should be in. He might have to wait. He maybe isn't as much of a shoe-in as Fedorov and Lidstrom are, Richie. But to me, yeah, absolutely. If you're asking me, is Mark Recchi a Hall of Famer? Absolutely.
Yeah, see, Mark Recchi is the tough, Drew. I see what you mean there. I mean, the points are there. But was he ever the best player on his team? Maybe on the Montreal teams, and after that, the Claire trade on those, you know, average Montreal teams, him and Danfus, those guys, you could argue he was the best player on the squad. But, you know, way under, of course, Jagr and Lemieux in Pittsburgh, and then Philly playing behind, you know, the some of the top players in Philadelphia, Lindros and that crew, even in Carolina, and then back to Pittsburgh, and with Boston way down, obviously, later in his career. But the points are there and the numbers are there, and maybe it's not the flashiest way, and his consistency does have to be given him, you know, given credit where credit's due. And he was terrific when the Pens won the Cup in 1991. you know, 34 points in 24 games. He had a couple hundred point seasons. You have to put him in. But yeah, I doesn't necessarily pass the eye test. I agree. I never went to it. I like Mark Recchi. I respected his game for sure. Smart player. Not the biggest guy, but really, really intelligent hockey player. But I never went and thought, okay, I'm watching a Hall of Famer here today. That's the thing. Like Eric Lindros, I went. That guy was the best player in the game for a few years. I don't even love Eric Lindros, but that guy was the best player in the game. See, I put in Lindros over Recchi, but Recchi's numbers are going to certainly exceed Lindros.
He's got the Stanley Cups. He had, I think, six seasons above 70 points, yeah. 300 points.
Does have the cups.
To me, it's just a matter of time. Like he's got to go in. He might not be
three cups
at that upper echelon, right. Richie. But I mean, you're still talking about a guy that had 1,533 points. I mean, how many guys can say that? And I think, and then you look at, you mentioned kind of the longevity. Those last, he wins the cup with Boston, yeah, towards the end of
and
his
Carolina
career.
Too.
He played 81 games that year. Yeah. It's not like he was missing a lot of games. Like he was playing every game, mm-hmm. and he was a big part of that, you know, kind of that depth for the Boston Bruins. So
you mentioned Eric Lindros. He's the next guy up on our list. You know, won the Hart Trophy in 94-95, 865 points in 760 career games.
There was a period of time where Eric Lindros was the best player in the game.
Yep.
And you could say what you want about him off the ice and all that stuff and the injuries and everything else, but he's a Hall of Famer to me, and I think he should get in this time.
Yeah, I agree. And it's tough to say because if you're talking Fedorov, Lidstrom, and then Recchi and Lindros, probably one of those two guys won't get in, or one of those three guys.
I think those
one of Fedorov might not get in if you're, because they don't have to put in the max amount of players, right? Each year they can decide. You know, the other guy, you know, speaking of Lindros, Philadelphia Flyers, the other guy that is kind of interesting to me is Chris Pronger. Because Chris Pronger hasn't officially retired.
He's not eligible yet.
And he's not eligible. And then there was some talk that because he's already missed some years, that might count.
But how much is the NHL paying him to do that?
Exactly. Okay. No, but I mean, as far as Lindros goes, he averaged 1.1 or 1.2 points a game. I think it was actually 1.2 points a game. And Richie mentioned that for a time there in the mid-90s and late 90s, he was the most dominant player. And to me, he should get in. And if it wasn't for those concussions, you know, he would have had an extra 500 or 600 career points. I mean, his career was cut short. When he was playing with Toronto and Dallas, he just wasn't the same player. But he really took that power forward. There hasn't been really a power forward since Lindros. I know guys like Milan Lucic are good power forwards, but nobody scored 100 points and did that like Lindros. So I think it's just a matter of time before he gets in.
Jeremy Roenick, Chris Osgood, and Curtis Joseph.
I mean, all three of those guys would be under consideration. I think Roenick first and foremost, but if you're going to go in with four guys, then I don't think any of those guys get in this year. I mean, it's possible Roenick gets in over Lindros. That would be a point of debate. Now, Roenick didn't win anything, aside from the 96 World Cup. Mm-hmm. And he has the points to back it up. And Jeremy Roenick
got the goals, 513 goals in 1,363 games.
Yeah, and Jeremy Roenick was one of the top players in the league for in the 90s there. And he kind of dropped off a bit, certainly later on in his career, as he talked about playing too long there. But if you're looking at it as compared to the other guys, saying four guys get in, I have Lidstrom's a shoe-in. And then Fedorov was a better all-around player than Jeremy Roenick. Eric Lindros was the most dominant player to me in the mid-90s. And then Recchi's numbers are better, and he's got the championships, are better than Roenick's. I think he gets in. Although I think Roenick, you know, depending on the draw in the year, will likely get in because of the goal total, that 500 goal total.
Yeah, another guy that you always hear is out there, Sergei Makarov as well, but he didn't play enough in the NHL.
Right. His work was done in Russia.
It's a hockey Hall of Fame, though.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, he's a guy that maybe if they decide that maybe Roenick or Lindros isn't ready yet, maybe they go Fedorov, Lidstrom, Recchi, and maybe they put a guy like Makarov in. I think with Osgood and Joseph, the two goalies that you mentioned, Drew, it's interesting. I think we'd all agree, Curtis Joseph, like as far as skill set goes, was probably a better goalie than Chris Osgood. And Chris Osgood was always, you know, a victim of, he was all on those great Detroit Red Wings teams.
Chris Osgood's not a Hall of Famer, is he? I mean, Chris Osgood is not a Hall of Famer. Chris Joseph was the better goalie. I mean, his Edmonton years and his St. Louis and even Toronto. Now, his stats may not back it up, but he played on some poor defensive teams. Curtis Joseph was a better goalie than Chris Osgood.
And then
I'm not sure either of them were Hall of Famers.
I don't think either of them are.
I would put Joseph, it's an interesting argument.
There's Hall of Excellent, not Hall of Very Good.
Yeah, and he was excellent. And, well, I mean, it's a debate, right? There's no wrong answer, right, Drew?
So no, your answer is always the wrong answer.
Yeah. No, but you look at Cujo, and he was always one of my favorite goalies. He was around, obviously, the Patrick Waugh, Eddie Belfour era. Mm-hmm. And for Edmonton in those years where they were winning with not very good teams, mm-hmm. he was incredible. And as you mentioned, he went to Toronto and was very good with the Leafs. He was always very good. He never had bad years, but he was always, especially earlier in his career with St. Louis and some of those Edmonton teams, was on weaker teams. But to me, probably he gets the nod over Osgood, but then again, he doesn't have the Stanley Cups, right?
I know we got an interview coming from Vegas in a second here, but to look back at that era and just judge goaltenders based on the stats, that's why you need to have these writers who cover those teams during those times.
Osgood had a career 905 save percentage, but which isn't really good.
But yeah, that's also relative to the time and to the teams he was playing on. Detroit had the puck all game.
I want to give props to Steve Dryden, the managing editor of TSN Hockey. He wrote a great piece on TSN.ca arguing that Don Baisley, former player agent, obviously from Winnipeg, deserves enshrinement in the Hall of Fame as well.
He'd be the first player agent.
He would be the first player agent in there. I think we can get on board with that.
Oh, 100%.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to head out to Las Vegas and talk to Steve Karp of the Las Vegas Review Journal. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Legal Curve, and our website with latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is LegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Las Vegas Review Journal, Steve Karp. Steve, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Good to be with you.
Steve obviously brought you on to talk about the chatter about the Jets, or pardon me, the NHL coming to Las Vegas either via expansion or via relocating a franchise. To your mind, is the NHL in Las Vegas pretty much a foregone conclusion at this point?
I'd like to think that with everything that's been said and that's been going on, that it's looking more and more likely. But until it actually happens, I'm going to be a little bit leery. Only because I've lived in Vegas for 26 years, and I kind of know that you never take anything for granted until it's actually done. So, while I like to think there's a very good shot because the arena project is going swimmingly, and it looks as though there is an ownership group ready to go, I like the chances, yes.
Steven, you look at the arena, it's going to be a 20,000-seat arena, but apparently 17,500 for hockey. How do you get that many people in that arena for 41 nights a year?
You win. It's very simple. You win. Now, that's going to be the tricky part of this whole equation. How do you put a winning team on the ice for the long haul? I think, you know, let's assume that this is going to be an expansion team and not a relocation. People will be patient to a point, but at some point the team's got to at least be competitive on the ice to give you, as a fan, hope that your team can at least compete for the Stanley Cup at some point.
Steve, I know you wrote about this as part of your article in the Las Vegas Review Journal. It's about the Maloofs and how they'll be part of the group that would be part of the ownership group in Las Vegas there. And we've heard, you know, the Maloofs have had some money trouble, and when they still own the Sacramento Kings of the NBA. What have you been able to find out what type of shape that their finances are in now?
They're in much better shape now than they were a few years ago when the recession hit. And everything kind of bottomed out with the economy here in Vegas, you know, especially with the hotels and the housing industry. It took tremendous hits. I mean, really massive hits. And the Maloofs were overextended on the Palms, and they were forced to sell pretty much all of their controlling interests. And, of course, they'd borrow money from the NBA, and they were in a protracted battle with the city of Sacramento on a new arena. So they weren't making any friends over there in SAC. This is an entirely different situation. I think what the Maloofs bring to this is quote-unquote local ownership. They live in Vegas. They've been here for some time. They're not going to be the main money people, so you don't have to worry about them defaulting or screwing everything up. And it'll be the first to tell you they don't know, squat about hockey. They actually thought they knew about basketball. So I think that's a big thing. I think William Foley is going to be the main money guy. And I think, the key for this thing to work is to hire good hockey people in your front office. That's the only way this thing really works long term. You've got to get people who know the game, who know the way to build a team in this era, not 30 years ago. As you guys well know, hockey has changed dramatically, with the international element, with the analytics part of it. There's so many different components now in trying to build a winning franchise. And they're going to have to get it right the first time. They're not going to get a second shot to screw up. And so that's going to be the key to this whole thing.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Steve Karp of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Steve, you mentioned him in passing in answering the question about the Maloofs, but who is William Foley? Sort of where does his money come from? And why would he want to own an NHL team? What's the incentive for him aside from just being an owner of a pro sports franchise?
Well, you just kind of hit on it. I think he's a guy with a lot of money. He's the head of Fidelity Financial. So you talk about investments and all that sort of stuff. Plus, he's also involved with several other businesses, both here in the States and abroad. So he's got money. This isn't John Spano. Okay, this is a legit businessman who, I think, like most people who have money, aspire to get involved with something they love, which is sports. And I don't know his hockey background, if there is one, frankly. But again, there are people who own hockey teams that, don't know a blue line from a red line. And they still do okay. So the big thing for this will be the stability financially. And this is what the NHL has to make sure before they green light this thing, that these guys do have the money for the long haul, not the short term. The short term is not that hard, but over the long term, because they don't want to bail on Vegas after 5-6 years. They don't want it to be like Atlanta, had been twice before, as you guys in Winnipeg well know that situation. And it's just very important that the right people are owning it and running it. And William Foley appears on the surface to have the financial wherewithal to handle owning an NHL franchise in the 21st century.
Steve, when you look at Las Vegas, I mean, there's questions as to who will fill the arena. Will it be tourists? Will it be residents of the Las Vegas area? But if it is, obviously a portion or a significant portion are residents of the Las Vegas area, and a lot of the people who live there, not all obviously, a lot of people who live there and work on the Strip or work in the kind of shift work. It's a shift work kind of city. Is the NHL going to have to structure the schedule of home games, in accordance with those kind of trends in the city?
Well, it's funny you mention that. The Midnight, the minor league team, ECHL team that we've had in Vegas, the Wranglers, for years they've promoted a midnight hockey game. It started at 11:59 p.m. just when the swing shift was going on and the other shift was coming off.
Mm-hmm.
And it did okay. That might be something that, the Vegas NHL team might want to see if the league would approve and kind of gimmick it up in that regard. But I wouldn't want to make a habit of playing hockey at midnight in Vegas, although it would probably serve the home team well because it would really throw the visiting team out of whack in terms of its routine. But to your point about the swing shift, we've got about 2 million people in Clark County now. So if you even go by the premise that one-third at any given time are unavailable, it still gives you enough people to come to games. And I'm not so sure that tourism is going to be a big factor in this. I mean, if Winnipeg is playing the Vegas team and it's, like 10 below in Winnipeg and you want to come to Vegas where it's 70 and sunny, and play some golf and watch the Jets, because maybe you can't get a ticket, you know, in Winnipeg because you guys sold out all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That might make sense. Or you know, the transplanted New Yorkers would want to come when the Rangers are in town, or the transplanted Midwesterners for the Blackhawks, and certainly the Californians for the Kings, and maybe even the Ducks and the Sharks. But I wouldn't think that tourism carries the day for the Vegas franchise to make it or break it. I think ultimately the Las Vegas community is going to have to step up. They're going to have to buy the season tickets. They're going to have to buy the club seats. They're going to have to, the businesses are going to have to, you know, sponsor it, whether it's, you know, putting advertising on the Dasher boards or whatever. It's such a corporate thing these days, as you guys well know, and therefore you've got to have that element in there and in place, and that's locals. So locals are going to ultimately drive this thing.
Steve, you mentioned, you know, the locals, and that brings up my next question here. And when you hear about Las Vegas potentially coming to the NHL, and it looks like there's a very strong chance that happens, everyone wants to know, well, how big of a season ticket base will this Las Vegas NHL team have to be successful, profitable? And within that is, how much will the casinos have an impact on that as far as being the primary purchaser of season tickets? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, those are great questions, and I think those are still to be determined. I think, you know, the Maloofs and Foley have probably been doing their own due diligence financially on what it would take for this thing to work, because remember, they're still knocking out the lease with the MGM folks, so we don't know what they get in terms of the signage, in terms of the club seats and the suites, you know, what percentage of concessions. The parking, by the way, is going to be free, which is going to be a nice perk for anybody who goes to games. Of course, the traffic could turn out to be a nightmare given it's right on the strip. But all that aside, one of our business writers talked to somebody who was knowledgeable of the situation, and he said that if the Vegas team could get between 9,000 and 10,000 season ticket holders and sell out all the suites, they'd be in good shape in terms of having a chance to make it financially. As for the casinos backing it, I would think that, yes, the casino owners that are named MGM International, we're talking about Steve Wynn, Sheldon Adelson, who runs the Venetian and the Palazzo, Michael Gaughan, who runs the South Point, the Boyd Group, which owns the Sam's Town, And so I'm sure some of your listeners who've been to Vegas are familiar with all these names. I would think that all of these entities would buy a suite or at least club seats. I would like to think my newspaper would probably want to buy a suite to entertain the advertisers and stuff. So, I think, you know, of course, the idea of also being the first major professional sports franchise will also add some cachet to it.
Final question for you, Steve. What do you make of, you know, Commissioner of the NBA Adam Silver's recent pro-gambling op-ed in the New York Times? And do you think that changes the stance maybe of the NBA possibly trying to get into Las Vegas as well?
Well, you know, it's funny because it was obviously a 180 from his predecessor's
mm-hmm.
stance.
Mm-hmm.
David Stern was very anti-gambling, and it took all sorts of pressure and education to get him to approve the All-Star game in Vegas in 2007. Adam Silver's a little smarter in that he's younger, he understands the gambling element, and that if the NBA can make a buck off of it as a revenue stream, that's why he would support it. Because, you see, the players get paid so much. The idea of, let's say, LeBron James or somebody throwing a basketball game or shaving points, it is almost absurd because you couldn't pay the guy enough money to make it worth his while to avoid jeopardizing his career. The referees, of course, is another story, as we learned with Tim Donaghy.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as, you know, hockey, I mean, you guys can bet up in Canada, can't you, on hockey?
Yep.
To do your lottery?
Yep.
Right? So, you know, last I checked, there were still seven teams in Canada playing in the NHL. And hopefully it's coming, you know, with Quebec City at some point. So I don't think the gambling's a big deal in Vegas for the NHL or the NBA. The NBA holds its summer league in Vegas for the last 13 years, and you're not going to believe this. You can actually bet on the NBA summer league in some places in Vegas. Now, that's pretty hardcore, right?
Right.
You know, you're talking about, you know, rookies and free agents that you've never seen play, and you're making a wager on the outcome of those games. So I don't think Adam Silver's too worried about legalized gambling in Nevada, because he's very well educated. He has talked to the regulators, and he's talked to the sportsbook directors over the years from when the NBA came here for the All-Star game. So he's very well versed in it. And I think this is more of a power play for the NBA to generate another revenue stream for it. And I think the NHL would be very wise to take Adam's lead and have Gary Bettman embrace gambling on his league rather than run away from it. Because I think, you know, if you want to get people to watch hockey, if you want to get more people, you know, the chances of them watching if they have a wager on the game are a little bit better than if they don't have a bet on the game. Steve, you know, there's not as much incentive to watch the Jets play Ottawa without a bet if you're, you know, in Vegas, let's say. So if I'm Gary Bettman, I'm embracing gambling. I'm not discouraging it among, you know, my league.
Steve Karp is a journalist in Las Vegas. He writes for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Steve, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon to talk about the NHL and the possibility of it moving to Las Vegas.
Anytime, fellas, and I hope once it does become reality, we should revisit everything and talk about what kind of team they're going to put on the ice in Vegas.
Absolutely, Steve. Thanks very much for doing this.
Happy holidays to you guys.
Likewise, Steve. Thanks very much.
Can Steve get us comped at the Bellagio?
let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Steve Karp with the Las Vegas Review-Journal for joining us. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. I want to spend the last couple minutes before we get into cheers and jeers talking about the NHL and gambling, really on the heels of Adam Silver's op-ed in the New York Times that we referenced in the previous interview with Steve Karp. You know, is it time for the NHL to sort of follow the lead set by Adam Silver there and embrace in the United States, you know, the concept of gambling and you know, the time for the stigma of sports and gambling sort of being a one another to sort of move to the wayside?
Is he like at the forefront of this? Is he at the forefront?
Well, is he the first commissioner to come out and speak publicly about, you know, the need and the want for gambling to be more not prolific necessarily?
I think more it's NBA, because like if you look at David Stern, when the NBA came to Toronto, they had to take the NBA off of pro lines, right?
That's right.
But hockey's always been on there.
In Canada.
Before, yeah, but Gary Bettman, I'm pretty sure, is commissioner of the whole league.
Well, no, but in New Jersey right now, Governor Chris Christie tried to pass a law that allowed sports gambling. Mm-hmm. All four commissioners of the big four sports at that time.
Did he drive on the highway to get there?
No, you know, no. All four commissioners of the big four sports leagues were against Chris Christie's actions in trying to legalize sports gambling in New Jersey.
But it's still the. I'm not saying Adam Silver is not, you know, being progressive here, but I am saying that there is, in a sense, you know, having gambling in Canada where there's seven teams, not one, as Steve mentioned in the last segment. I think that's, you know, it's already been dealt with to a point. Sure, I mean, it's the elephant in the room, right, Drew, is that everybody can gamble online if they want to, and whether you can do it in a store here or do it online, you know, the legal, not legal part or the kind of gray area that you have, I understand. Adam Silver is trying to maximize profits. And so, do I think that changes things like NHL-wise and what'll happen in the U.S.? I'm not sure. But I think certain leagues will veer away from it more than others. I think the NFL is not going to embrace it. And I think...
The irony, of course, being everybody bets on the NFL.
Yeah, well, that's why. I mean, is basketball, baseball, and hockey betting really that big of a portion of the... I don't know. I don't see the books. I don't see what these gambling sites, their revenue... Nobody probably does. Half the time, they don't see their winnings. But I think it was blown out of proportion a little bit because it was in the New York Times, frankly.
Right, and I think it's safe to say that the amount of money that's gambled... spent on gambling, I should say, in the NFL is dwarfs what would be spent in the NHL just because of the fact that there's, as Richie mentioned, there's only seven Canadian teams, and a lot more of the money obviously comes from the U.S. with 10 times the population. But to me, it seems like the NHL or other sports leagues, and by the way, Bill Daly said he doesn't agree or disagree with Adam Silver giving
which
a very...
Which means he agrees, by the way. Well, taking no stance at all is a tacit approval.
Yeah, he's basically saying no comment, right? Yeah. And so the thing is, I look at it like if the NHL feels that there's enough money to be made, then they'll start to take a stance on it, right?
Right.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezzy. Just quickly, I'm going to be cheering Rick Jenneret, of course, the voice of the Buffalo Sabres. He went for treatment for throat cancer. He's going to call one period of tonight's Buffalo Sabres-Toronto Maple Leafs game, so he'll get my cheer.
Hard to follow that up. I'm going to cheer the Hall of Fame class, specifically Peter Forsberg, one of my favorite players growing up, and talk about extending his career too long. That guy fought as hard as he could to get that foot in a skate to be able to play for Colorado those last few years.
That's it for this Saturday afternoon in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Steve Karp of the Las Vegas Review-Journal, Carrie Frazier of TSN.ca's Come On Ref joined us in Saturday Spotlight, and Josh Cooper, he works for Yahoo Sports right now. In case you missed any of the show or any of those interviews, they'll be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Remus and Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hustler and Lawless are next.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.